This episode is made possible by OIT VoIP. Find your best-in-class revenue generation for MSPs all over the world. Learn more via the link in the show notes.
Welcome to a new show and watching Tom wing it here live. I do plan to have some co-hosts at some time, but for now, the first one getting started, you get to watch just me cover the news. And I want to bring topics that are relevant as an IT service provider, as an MSP, relevant to me, which probably means a little bit relevant to you. And I see in the comments already, no, I'm not Ron Burgundy. Sorry to disappoint. But I will bring maybe some snark, maybe a little bit of snark. I definitely have some opinions on things that go on here. And I've got a lot of news stories to pack in. So let's get started. The goal is not to have too much fluff, but to have plenty of news. Let me bring this up. All right. The first one I found interesting. Now, there's a lot that goes on in Reddit r MSP. I'm not going to dive into all the drama, but this particular thing I think might be a little bit of a trend. And Comet Backup self-hosted fee coming. If you don't know about Comet Backup, it's actually a really cool backup system. I evaluated a long time ago, and I thought about talking about it from some perspective of things I liked and didn't like and why we didn't go with it, but that's not what this is about. This is about the fact that they're now changing this business model. And one of the things that makes Comet interesting, and you're going, wait a minute, I've never heard of Comet Backup, but you may have, it gets a lot of rebranding because that's one of the options where you can have them customize it to be your company name backups and very customized. And they also offers self-hosted. Now, this is the double-edged sword I wanted to talk about and where I think this is going. I've seen companies fail at this in the past because they don't realize offering a self-hosted option means people will self-host it, but people that don't know what they're doing will self-host it. This does include, I remember someone in the early days reaching out to me who was going to use this to build a backup. And at the same time, they didn't understand what SSH was, but wanted to run Linux servers. I'm like, oh, great. You're already got the business started and you don't know what SSH is. And I believe these are some of the problems that Comet was running into, which is leading them to a big price hike. I didn't get this email as I unsubscribed from Comet when we stopped evaluating it. But this post over in our MSP talks about the fact that they've now dramatically increased the price for the self-hosted version. And I've seen companies do this as a way to slow down the self-hosted, because there is obviously the revenue that you make from hosting everything yourself, especially storage. Storage is a great moneymaker, because as you get to charge people for hosting things in these storage clouds, you get discounts as the storage grows up. But then as you become more popular, you get to charge more. So there's a delta where you make more money. So there's possibility of that. But I believe some of the reputation stuff that happens is another reason to do this. I'll go all the way back to one of the reasons that Ubiquiti, who I was really pleased when they had a self-hosted option for their NVR platform. I was really disappointed when it went away, but understanding the support that came with it, because people would start not building NVRs to spec and then they would complain and have support problems. I think you're having some of the same. People who don't set these things up properly suddenly go, wait, I can save all this money. And sometimes the people who want to save the most money, not always, but there is a percentage of them that also need lots of tech support because they also are looking for other shortcuts and not knowing how to do things. So I just want to put that on people's radar. I could expect other self-hosted products, unfortunately, to go this way. And one of the big reasons I'm such an open source advocate and wear that tinfoil open source hat, as I've been told, is because with open source, well, we don't have to worry about these product lock-ins where, well, the self-hosted is licensed from them. Therefore, they only are renting it to you until the terms change. And I think the terms sounds like they're changing on there. Now let's jump over to what happens to all that money. And I think this is interesting. This is something you don't necessarily think about as much. We deal with ransomware from very head on from the event that happens, but once they get the money, and unfortunately they pay the ransom very frequently, this is the nature of things. This is why these ransomware groups keep operating, is because people keep paying. But this is a fun deep dive into how Lazarus Group laundered $200 million. Now, I don't have $200 million, and you can speculate, oh, I would do all kinds of fun things. But what if you had $200 million and you can't just put it in a bank? You can't just buy things with it. You have to figure out how to convert it to currency where you can buy things. You have to create some untraceable steps in it. And boy, this is a good deep dive of walking through the last several years of money and all the events that they had and how they went through and moved that money through different sources to get it into something they could do something with. It's actually quite a bit of work in this. And it's one of those things that the infinite ledger that is money of these different cryptocurrencies is just that. It's a really fun, interesting thing where it's not at all anonymous. It's the opposite of anonymous. Even though you may not know who owns a particular address, it's going to be in the ledger. If we didn't all have a transparent view into the ledger, we would not be able to identify the transactions. Well, that's where the problem comes in. If I pay a particular theft address, I need to figure out where it went next. And that's where the money tumbling comes in. And that's kind of what they're going to start breaking down here is they know the theft addresses. We know where the ransom was paid. Then we have all the different spots where we do the mixing. And they do a good job of breaking this forensics down of how the mixing occurs. Because obviously, if I have, and we know this wasn't all one sum of $20 million or $200 million, but as it's a series of sums, you could look at it and go, well, if we see $10 million go in and $10 million go out, even though it may have changed address while it was in exchange, we can probably surmise that it must be that same amount and it must be the same user. And that would be part of why these tumblers have to have many addresses, many things, and they hide in the noise of many transactions. But that doesn't mean you can't really start diving into this and breaking it all down where you can go, all right, I want to know exactly where these transactions went and let's start reverse engineering it. Whole book on this topic that I read that blew my mind about the traceability of all of them. This does include, because someone's going, well, Tom, isn't that why some of these anonymous cryptocurrencies were invented? Yes, and they have tracking on those as well. That is the level of detail that, because of the volumes of data we're tracking, we're able to really dive into, well, not me personally, some of these different companies that are able to do forensics on this. And forensics accounting, man, this is essentially what this is. Even though it's forensics blockchain, it's still, I'm going to call it accounting adjacent. And going through and figuring out each of these was all broke down kind of elegantly in here. And it really puts in perspective the amount of effort that has to go into obscuring the cash, the other side of it, all the crypto handling to turn this into money. And man, I mean, this is its own deep dive that they've cited to people on each tweets and everything else, how they did the chip mixer. I'm just blown away by this. This is one of those sit down, go through all the attacks that one group did, which is also its own amazing thing. Until we get down, I'm going to wear out the scroller trying to get to the bottom of this. This is how much research went into chasing all of this. Even the post-mix connections to the theft address, while only partial demix of 6,400 ETH from the hack comfort is gained on chain Paxful deposit, they're connected to Coinbase, CoinMetro. It's just, it's a head scratcher. Like it's like the, I would almost describe this how it starts out in the movies, and we make fun of these movies of they're just bouncing it off all these mixers or some stupid graphic on some cheesy show to represent technology. But it kind of is how it worked out, going, you know, we can bounce it through a mixer of 20 different exchanges and all of this. It's just absolutely wild. Oh, I'll make sure all of these links, I'll try to drop them as we go here. I'll make sure that they're all added. Well, MSP dispatch people will make sure this is all added to the show notes and everything else, because I want you guys to be able, I can only cover this on the surface. This is a massive amount of data. And I always encourage everyone to just deep dive into all this to have a better understanding of it. Because yes, there is each one of these transfers. Look at this. Okay, I'll stop fascinating. You can completely disagree with crime, by the way, as I do. I'm not, but you can still be in awe of the criminals and the level of sophistication and be impressed by it. So it's kind of the I'm not at all encouraging criminal behavior, but sometimes you're like, wow, that's they went through a lot. That's a lot of complexity on the back end. So as hard as ransomware is in some instances on the front end, the back end is definitely, yes, a lot there. Now jumping over to your privacy. Yes. For For several decades, major wireless carriers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, collected troves of sensitive user location movement data and then sold access to any random nitwit with two nickels thrown together. That is a great opening line over here at TechDirt, and it really slams into the problem with the folks over there. They have been double dipping us. You know, Verizon made an obscene amount of money and profits, but they're going to now have to pay a fine because not only are they making money on the service that we're paying them for, they're also spying on us. And this is infuriating to me. I will go right here into this line. It should be clear the $192 million, the actual proposed by the FCC, is a tiny fraction of the money these companies made monetizing your every last moment for decades, which is what makes me even angrier. They knew what they were doing was wrong. They had no problem with it. This is where fines don't match the crime. They're like, well, let's make a business decision here. I could sell users' data. By selling the users' data, I will get fined a small percentage of what I will make. Do we break the law? Of course you break the law. You have a fiduciary responsibility to your shareholders to break the law is almost how this is encouraged. This is what drives me crazy is I hope to see some of these fines that I almost want to call them like extinction level events where it's so risky to do something egregious and abuse the fact that they have our data that these companies go, we could be put out of business if we're caught doing this. Like there's a voice of reason in there because there is no voice of reason when they're like, well, what's the fine? We have a guy over there who seemed really angry about people's privacy. Well, yeah, but it's going to be we're going to make way more of this. So the downside risk is basically we're going to have a news article and this guy, Tom's going to make fun of us. Along with a bunch of other podcasters and other people, there's going to be some hit pieces in a bunch of tech articles. And what's going to happen? We're going to do this again as soon as the smoke clears and we don't make too many people angry. And we'll just do this again because the fine wasn't really much. Because when you start looking at the amount of money that they made off this, it only infuriates you a little more. And that's my most angry story I think I have right now, at least from a user privacy standpoint. That definitely drove me nuts. This I have not validated, but I want to talk about it. This was posted today. It came up in my feed and I started reading it. And also I like the little squiggly graphics. Let me show a link here because that's not why we're here for squiggly graphics. We're here for a really interesting write-up. Now, granted, this is somewhat marketing from a lab 539. And as I said, I have not validated, but what they did was a summary of 6 months of tracking the adversary in the middle campaigns of previously known as man in the middle. We've kind of updated the way we label this. It's as to adversary in the middle. And this is honestly one of your huge threats is people putting credentials where they don't belong because people don't use password managers, people being our clients, not the audience of MSPs listening to us. But the orange dots represent an IP address and the blue dots represent a domain. We can see for the most part that infrastructure is not shared amongst the campaigns. Most domains are hosted on their own infrastructure and infrastructure is mostly not repurposed. Now, this is a series of threat actors who are basically creating all these different squat domains. I like the visuals in here because what they're showing you is creating essentially really close but not the same domains and trying to get you to log in with a password on there. And we know this is pretty much how so many of the attacks occur. And what I love about this is all the statistics on there for who was targeted. And no one's going to be shocked to know Microsoft's right at the top of that list. You have a target of, you know, we want people to log in with their Office accounts because everything's SSO. And that whole SSO is like, get that token, grab that token from there. And they're using proxies. Some of you are going, well, come on, doesn't 2FA stop this? Or is different attestation systems like, you know, FIDO ones where we're using the key. And that's why it comes all down to session tokens. By getting able to get these session tokens and proxying the connections. And I don't think this is listed in here, but I know one of the most popular tools out there is Evil Gen X. I've talked about it before. You can look up on there. And it is a way that you can absolutely, with a high level of sophistication and automation, create a proxy that. And the reason I'm not saying just a fake page where it grabs your password, I'm saying proxies because it actually does proxy the connection to the proper destination. So your login actually goes through, but they get an extra copy of your session token. That's how they're able to impersonate you. It's really just clever how this works. One of the big ways that hopefully all of you have already fixed this is to adjust how long those session tokens last for. This is something you can go and change in the Microsoft account so they don't last for as long, because if they don't last for as long, they have a much more limited time that by which they can expire. But yeah, and this is going back to people say, well, what about web filtering? What about my firewall has a threat list in there? Well, that's where they break this down as well. DigitalOcean was one of the most popular places used. Next was Amazon and Microsoft. OVH, if you're not familiar with OVH, they're kind of like, not to the same scale and scope, but kind of like Amazon for a lot of European. It's a big hosting company over there in the European area. And this is where people go, well, I block this or I block that. But the problem is it's really hard to block. Many of these taken over, probably used with fake credit cards, DigitalOcean, Amazon, and Microsoft accounts. And one of the challenges you run into for this is there's not a lot of incentive for these companies to kick these people off because they're paying customers, even though they may have paid with a some other, see back to money laundering scheme of they were able to do that level of sophistication to take the ransoms that were paid. They undoubtedly set up and maybe fake or maybe not fake credit cards to buy all these legit hosting providers and buy legit domain names and start doing all of the targeting. So yeah, this is just a fun read for the front end of the ransomware. And that's absolutely, you know, a pretty big deal here for how this gets here. And it's where these problems, yeah, I'll start. And I've seen someone already make this in the comments here. I believe Google is implementing an extra security with the session tokens. Why? Yes, they are. Let's go ahead and go to that next article. These articles are not accidentally in order. So despite me doing it live, we did have this as my next one. New Chrome feature aims to stop hackers from using stolen cookies. I talked about this before, right after, it was almost a year ago now, Linus Tech Tips made himself rather famous. We learned that someone took their session tokens. We also accidentally learned this through the video feed that Linus made that he doesn't like to wear clothes when he sleeps, and got his whole channel taken over. This is all done with these session tokens. And one of the things that I know is a big challenge to do because it breaks a lot of things. It's not that we don't have the technology to do this. And it's specifically, the new feature is going to be called device bound session credentials. Now, the problem, and if you've ever really played with session tokens, and I did a demo right after Linus Tech Tips got his whole channel taken over, how easy it is to grab a session token and replay it in a browser. Matter of fact, there's plugins for this where you can almost immediately with, this is the evil Gen X we were just talking about is commonly used. When it grabs someone's session token and it's able to create one, there's a plugin to get the data right from there and replay it in your browser. You can connect these things. So from the time you clicked one of these fake sites and got in and I have a copy of your tokens, I can then right away replay them essentially in my browser. So I'm logged in as you. Now, one challenge you run into is what we may refer to as impossible travel. It's a tracking you may have on different things like your VPNs, where to go, wait a minute, the IP address you came from was this one. Suddenly, you're coming from an IP address in Russia. Well, that's really suspicious. So they, once again, proxy again off of those DigitalOcean domains. They're going to do so. If they know I'm in the Midwest region, or more specifically, I'm in the Detroit area, they're going to proxy off of there. That session token then kind of bypasses those alerts. You're like, yeah, their IP address changed, but their IP address always changes when I'm when I go to a local place and use my computer, my IP address changes. When I go between my studio, my office, and my other office, and I have an office in Detroit, an office in Toledo, I don't have to re-log in each time because Google goes, hey, look, you're the same person and your IP address changes. But if someone does this and we have it device bound, we'll start expiring those tokens. And I'm looking forward to this. The new feature, as I said, is going to make it impossible for attackers to steal cookies by cryptographically binding authentication tokens to your device. After enabling this authentication process, linked to a specific public-private key pair generated using a device trusted platform module that can't be exfiltrated and securely stored on your device. So even attackers steal your cookies, they won't be able to access your accounts. That's huge. And this is kind of how I figured they would be doing it in is with the TPM. So now we have another, you know, use case where the TPM, which is becoming kind of standard on a lot of your business laptops and business desktops. So yeah, it's going to be another good reason to use it. Definitely excited about that. Now, who's less excited to talk about things is Congress. Now, once again, they get to hear how Citrix MFA snafu led to a massive data theft. And that was the United Healthcare CEO. There's a lot to unpack here with this particular story. Because now that we know how it happened, yeah, no one's thrilled about this. Like, really? So first they paid the ransom. They contributed to the first story of now that money has to go through a bunch of shuffling. And by the way, that story of them paying it and then the no honor among thieves of the ransomware people not sharing the affiliate links and not sharing the payout, that's another story into itself. Hopefully you've read that one already. There's not enough time to cover all the shenanigans of the paying of it, but let's talk about what happened because that's where things get interesting. So not only did he pay the money, they also no 2FA. Does that sound familiar at all? And this is so crazy right now. So three U.S. senators Monday sent a letter to the U.S. Government Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency asking for IMSEC by body details of how it's helping change healthcare recover from the February IT breach, as well as a larger risk transfer. Criminals spent 9 days snooping around. This is the part I also wanted to highlight. They didn't know they were there. And the not knowing they were there part drives me bananas because, like, come on. No canaries, no, there's some really low hanging fruit here you could do that would have, you know, probably tipped you off of this. Surely they have a SIM tool. Surely they have this. I would love a full on differ report that just breaks all of this down. I want to know everything that went wrong because it's kind of a lesson learned. The other side, my hopeful optimistic side that won't really happen is these level of events, there was a lot of controversy with United Health and their acquisition to get where they are. They basically bought up everybody. And buying up everybody was something the FTC said, you know, that's probably not a great idea to put it all in one hands. And of course, they claimed that you would have this whole, you know, one great low price that we could provide IT services for on the back end to all these providers. What could possibly go wrong putting all our eggs in one basket? I mean, they surely have, because they're publicly traded, all these, you know, compliance things and audits and SOC 2. I'm sure they have all that and it's perfectly fine. And I'm sure they didn't, you know, have any carve outs on those. And they certainly have insurance that said we have multi-factor, but the portal didn't have multi-factor authentication. So yeah, despite being able to pass some security compliances, they clearly didn't have it. And I don't like finding out here. Now, what the hopefulness of me, because I know what a disaster. I have many friends that work in healthcare, and I know what a disaster this was from every step of the way, is we really need extinction level laws. What I mean by that is you don't get to be IT company anymore. You have now been, I don't like to use the word much eminent domain, but whatever that looks like where you just say, no, you cannot behave. So you cannot be a company anymore. Sorry, you had your chance. You made your money. I'm sure there's a golden parachute, which I think we should not have for these people. This is an event where, no, you don't get to play in IT anymore. You've now proven yourself incompetent. And I don't know if jail time is necessary, but certainly taking these companies apart so that they really think about risk. Because the fact that they're still in business years later, Equifax, doesn't really bode well for these companies wanting to do it, because if they can still exist after events where their ineptitude. Now, of course, that is a big thing that has to be gone through a proper court system to say, was it a 0 day that they had no control over? Because that's completely excusable. If you get attacked and you had no control over it, so to speak, because it was a 0 day, it was a flaw in software, it was a flaw found, okay. But that's different when you say, well, we forgot to turn the 2FA in a portal. Whoops, only cost people possibly lives at stake here because it's medical. So I'll quit ranting on it and leave that for people to consider. Now, speaking of 0 days, this is one of them where, hey, companies that are on this topic right here of the 0 days, there's a really good write-up. Cisco Talos Group does, they have no problem being transparent about themselves. This is the new attack that was only recently found. They found out that it's been going on since July of 2023. They discovered it here much more recently. They've got a couple fixes, but the part I really wanted to highlight here and go ahead and read more on this is the initial access. We, This is the Cisco Telos people writing this. We have not determined the initial access vector. That is scary. Cisco is not a small company. This is sitting at the edge of many, many large companies, which is why it was targeted. But the we have not determined initial access vector. They have patches that stop the lateral movement from inside, but yeah, they don't know the initial access vector. That still scares me. This is one of those times when I'm not blaming anyone, so to speak, because writing good software is hard. But if you are a company affected by this at Cisco, I think Cisco is the one that needs to be in a hot seat. But the Telos group, I do have confidence that they will keep digging. They're a really group of smart people at taking things apart and figuring that out. Kind of going back a few years, because I actually covered this breach, if you'll look and find a video on it, this is the Marriott breach. And turns out they don't know the difference between SHA-1 and encryption. And I'm glad that our courts are catching up with the technical things, going, you know, we kind of caught you here and you did not encrypt things on the back end. Hashing is not encryption. We've learned that lesson. And some people are in some trouble and are going to have to pay some fines for that, which I think is definitely a good thing. And I think the last story I have here is this one, which started some controversy. I don't know why people, I started a lot of controversy on LinkedIn over this. This is Microsoft. They are so desperate for you to use your web browser. They have a driver that blocks you from changing the default web browser. This is not a great idea, Microsoft, because this breaks the automation level for you to do it. So, if you're doing things on an automated level, which as the MSP and IT people we are, this is a problem. We have to change a key. Now we have to change the automation to change a registry key. And this is just not a great look, Microsoft, that you really are trying to force this. And it's not that compromised browser hijacking is the huge problem we have now, but it's still an issue. And I'm not thrilled with Microsoft's ever desperate move to try to force this onto their browsers. Their track record security doesn't make me want to use their browsers. And their lock-in and that they locked you in and they locked you in further doesn't thrill me. But hey, leave your thoughts and comments on that one. We'll see if it starts the same debate as it started on LinkedIn about that. I think that's all I have for the news today. Hopefully, I didn't talk too fast. I want to run through all these topics. You can find me at upcoming events like MSP GeekCon. You can find me here on MSP Media Network, occasionally hosting these shows, but let me know what you think of this show. My plan is to keep doing this and maybe occasionally do it with a friend, talking about all this fun new stuff and all these different topics. We also have on the Media Moves Media MSP Media Network. See, this when you do it live, this gets edited out on the MSP Dispatch. We have the AI Roundup. We have the MSP Dispatch Live hosted by Tom Lawrence. That's this show here. We have MSP Dispatch. And then we have the MS Community Live event, episode 34 at 11 a.m. So, oh, and I see someone wants to know when to do some of the other rants I have on other things. We'll figure out those at a future date of how we want to rant about those. You can definitely follow me on all the socials to find my rants. And definitely join all the socials. Like and thumbs up over at MSP New Network. I'm also in their Discord. So the way to trigger Tom to rant is go to the Discord that you'll find me in and do an at Lawrence Systems and tag me in something. I'll definitely dive into topics. And, you know, if someone's wrong on the internet, I need to know. Let me know. And if you're wrong, you think I'm wrong, then we should have a whole discussion and start that in the comments here. Head over to the MSP New Media Network and dive in over there. And like I said, tag me and let's have a debate. Thanks everyone for joining. This was a lot of fun. And did I do it okay? Well, let me know on that too. Make sure you do the thumbs up and subscribe over here.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.